Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is an overview of business protocols and critical features in WebSphere Partner Gateway version 6.2. Today's presenters are Atu Gohead, Sonali Samantaray, and Rita Wu. Atu is the WebSphere Partner Gateway Level 3 team lead, and he has brought with him an in-depth experience of WebSphere Partner Gateway development. His technical leadership has helped various WPG customers in troubleshooting usage scenarios and enhanced usability. His expertise also includes grid computing, Java, J2EE, and web development. Sonali has more than 5 years of experience with IBM. She has expertise in product areas like adapters, WebSphere Portal Server, and WebSphere Partner Gateway. She performs the integration testing of WebSphere Partner Gateway with other products such as WebSphere Process Server. She is certified as IBM DP2 Associate and IBM SOA Associate. Rita has been working as WebSphere Partner Gateway Level 2 Technical Support Personnel for 4 years. Prior to this, she had also worked on several testing projects within IBM. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Atu, Sonali, and Rita.
Thank you, Joseph. Good day, everyone. This is Sonali Samantaray. Thank you for coming to this WebSphere Technical Exchange on WebSphere Partner Gateway. Before we move on to the agenda for the session, let's know in brief where WebSphere Partner Gateway fits in the IBM's product portfolio. WebSphere Partner Gateway is a loosely coupled component architecture which enables very high scalability and high availability topologies. It provides a robust, scalable platform for managing business-to-business communication and is an integral part of the WebSphere service-oriented architecture, business process management, and connectivity portfolio of products. Having said that, let's explore what this session is going to offer you. Moving on to slide number 2, the agenda slide. This session will focus on the overview of high-level architecture of WebSphere Partner Gateway, business and transport protocols supported by WebSphere Partner Gateway version 6.2, and will also discuss in detail about some of the critical features supported, like smart migration, first steps and IVT, integrated FTP and SFTP server, SFTP client, archiver support, integration with WebSphere Transformation Extender, and Web Mailbox feature. Moving on to slide number 3. The first topic on agenda is the high-level architecture overview of WebSphere Partner Gateway. We'll discuss about it in detail in the upcoming slide. Moving on to slide number 4. The slide shows the high-level architecture and high-level view of the document flow through the WebSphere Partner Gateway hub components. There are 3 major WebSphere Partner Gateway components, namely Receiver, Document Manager, and Console. As the name suggests, the job of the receiver is to receive and store documents from partners or backend system over many supported protocols and packages. It prepares them for further processing by WebSphere Partner Gateway's Document Manager. The received document and metadata are placed in the common shared file system, and the Document Manager is notified of the new arrival. The receiver handles any transport level functions. Next, the Document Manager. The document manager is the brain of the hub. This is where document processing occurs. When notified of a new document by the receiver, the document manager retrieves the document from the common storage, processes it, and routes it to the intended target. The administrator configures the document manager to perform the appropriate actions such as validation, transformation, or just pass-through on the document. It performs protocol-specific actions for received documents such as unpackaging, including decryption, signature verification, and acknowledgement. Also, it performs protocol-specific actions for sending documents such as packaging, including encryption, signature, and retries. Next component is the console. The console is the user interface for the community operator, internal partner, or the external partner to configure. It is also used to administer and monitor the trading activities. Based on the type of user logged into the console, appropriate functions are exposed based on the user's role. The console also provides an interface to a set of tools that allow you to view the documents that have flowed through the hub and provides troubleshooting for failed documents. Additionally, Vessio Partner Gateway also requires a shared file system such as network area storage used for common storage of documents. A database is used to store the hub configuration data, metadata, document status, activity logs, temporary store, and other information. The console and the document manager interact with the database to save or retrieve information. The next slide will talk about the extensible architecture of the Vessio Partner Gateway. Moving on to slide number 5. Vessio Partner Gateway provides a mechanism for adding custom functions called exits or handlers at different stages of document processing. It includes support for many predefined packages, protocols, and document types. With the pluggable extensibility of the architecture, new custom packages, protocols, or document types can be added by the hub administrator. There are three different workflows for every document passing through the document manager. First one is the fixed inbound workflow. Fixed inbound workflow is used for a fixed set of work actions that apply to all incoming documents. For example, unpackaging the incoming document like an A2 package document. Second, the variable workflow is, as the term implies, is variable in nature and is based on the actions specified by the administrator on the specific incoming document. Examples are validation and XML translation that apply to EDI and XML document flows. Third, the fixed outbound workflow is used for a fixed set of work actions that apply to all outgoing documents. For example, packaging the outgoing document to an AS2 package document. One example of architecture extension through the use of exits and handlers is for custom transports, packages, and protocols. Vessio Partner Gateway is extensible to enable custom transports, packages, and protocols to be added within the framework of a Vessio Partner Gateway runtime and community console-based administration. There are a number of exit points that enable the addition of custom listeners for additional transports, parsers, for additional packages and protocols. In this way, the rest of the infrastructure of Vessio Partner Gateway can be used in conjunction with these new capabilities. For example, a new transport could deliver a document such as EDX-12 that would be processed in the normal way through the rest of the system. Also, AS2 might be used to deliver a new protocol payload document. So the combination of standard and custom components can be used to extend and reuse all the capabilities of Vessio Partner Gateway. Moving on to slide number 6. Next, we will see the different business and transport protocols supported by Vesio Partner Gateway version 6.2. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 7. Vesio Partner Gateway includes built-in support for the transport, messaging, and business protocols. Using transport protocols, documents can be exchanged with partners over any of the following transports: HTTP or HTTPS, FTP or FTPS, or FTP scripting, JMS, SMTP, file directory based, and the SFTP. The business protocols that are supported are AS1, AS2, and AS3, ROSETnet 1.1 and 2.0, SOAP and SOAP with attachments, CXML, CIDX, and EBMS. This slide gives a snapshot of the transport and business protocols supported by Vesio Partner Gateway version 6.2. Next, moving on to slide number 8. Next on agenda is critical features supported in Vesio Partner Gateway version 6.2. The first one we will focus on is smart migration. The next two slides will talk about it in detail. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 9. What is smart migration? Smart migration helps you to migrate from previous supported versions of Vesio Partner Gateway, that is from version 6.0 or version 6.1 to 6.2, eliminating the manual work which was required earlier. What is expected from user before starting smart migration? The first and foremost thing is the user must back up the application database. Also, it is highly recommended to back up the previous version of Vesio Partner Gateway installation. Next, the user has to upgrade Vesio application server environment as mentioned in system requirements site. Ensure that there is no document in process before starting migration. In distributed mode, it is recommended to stop all clusters or servers before starting migration, except for deployment manager and node agent. It is important to note here that during the migration period, the system will not be able to serve any request, so downtime must be planned before starting the migration. Moving on to slide number 10. How can one make use of smart migration? By invoking Vesio Partner Gateway 6.2 installer, you will see Create New Instance or Migrate options under the installer panel, as shown in the figure in the slide. Once you select the Migrate option, installer will guide you through migration to version 6.2. It's important to note here is the options are displayed in external panel only if your previous version is a supported version of Vesio Partner Gateway. Common steps that are performed by smart migration in this process are stop clusters or server based on the topology Vesio Partner Gateway is installed on. Migrate the Vesio Partner Gateway application database. Migrate the hub over every machine. Next, start the clusters or servers. Some quick tips to verify the smart migration has gone fine or not is the first and easiest thing to verify is to log into the Vesio Partner Gateway Community Console and cross-check the version displayed in the login page. Next is to ensure you are able to see the new feature in version 6.2, that is Archiver tab under Hub Admin tab in the console. Next, moving on to slide number 11. After the Vesio Partner Gateway version 6.2 installation is completed, the user can launch the first step. The first step helps you to start and stop Vesio Partner Gateway applications receiver, console, and router, and even the deployment manager based on the topology you have installed Vesio Partner Gateway on. A snapshot of the first step is shown in the slide. Moving on to the next slide, that is slide number 12. Western Partner Gateway version 6.2 provides the facility to run installation verification test, IVT, at the end of Vessio Partner Gateway component installation. It is done by automatically placing installer verification test application jar files on the installation machine after installing any component. You can invoke the IVT anytime, either through first test or by executing a batch file or shell script. Using IVT tool, you can avoid manual checking of log files after installation of each Vessio Partner Gateway component. Logs are generated on verification of each component, and on unsuccessful installation, logs capture the likely reason of failure. Moving on to slide number 13. The next critical feature, integrated FTP server support, will be discussed by Atul. Over to you, Atul.
Thank you, Sonali. Good day, everyone. This is Atul. I would be walking you through the integrated FTP and the integrated SFTP server sections of today's agenda. Up next, first, we will basically looking at the features of the integrated FTP server, which is now part of WPG. Moving on to slide 14, we will first see the overview of this integrated FTP server support, and which would be followed by the installation and troubleshooting tips. So on slide 14, prior to the WPG 6.1 release, the WPG product was dependent on external FTP server. However, starting with WPG 6.1, the FTP server is now bundled along with the WPG product. The advantage of using this integrated FTP server is essentially the FTP server user accounts can be managed internally using the WPG console, and also the start-stop operations of the FTP server can be handled using the WPG console. There are various features available with this integrated FTP server, such as the user virtual directories can be created, the right permissions can be determined for per user, as well as the idle timeout on the user connections can be configured. The upload and download bandwidth for a user specific account can be limited. The hub administrator can monitor the user activities, such as the number of bytes uploaded or number of statistics with respect to the creation of user directories and things like that. And also, the FTP server supports to allow or ban some of the IPs based on the IP address restriction. Moving on to slide 16, we would now see the usage of the integrated FTP server along with WPG. There are a couple of considerations which is required to be kept in mind when installing the integrated FTP server. In case of a simple mode installation of WPG, the integrated FTP server gets installed by default. However, in case of a simple distributed or a fully distributed installation mode, we can optionally choose to install or not to install the integrated FTP server. The events which get generated during the document processing, such as performing an FTP transfer using this integrated FTP server, are logged and are viewable from the WPG console as part of the event viewer. The logging and tracing information which gets emitted either by the FTP server command execution or by the WPG handling of it essentially logged under the FTP server install location conf log folder location. This log has to be seen and viewed differently from the normal WPG server logs. As such, The format of this log file has the details on the timestamp as well as the class and the thread names, which might help us to do any troubleshooting as well as to gather the information on the document processing. Moving on to slide 16, we would now see the usage of the integrated SFTP server. The integrated SFTP server has been recently made part of the WPG product as part of the WPG 6.2 FixPack 4A. We would see the overview of this integrated SFTP server as well as some of the configuration details and the mandatory uploads of the key that requires to be exchanged with this SFTP server. Moving on to slide 17, the integrated SFTP server essentially supports the operations of FTP over SSH. The supported version of SSH is SSH v2, that is the version 2. The SSH server implements the SFTP subsystem for the file transfer, after which any of the SFTP clients, including the WebSphere Partner Gateway SFTP clients, essentially the receivers and the destination, can connect to this SFTP server. Before the file transfer is initiated, the authentication is done and a secure SSH channel is established between the client and the server. The integrated SFTP server essentially internally uses the Apache SSD libraries, and the commands which get implemented is part of the IETF draft for the SSH file transfer. Moving on to slide 18, there is a mandatory configuration step required to be done before performing any of the exchanges with the integrated SFTP server. As we saw in the previous slide, the transfer happens only after a secure channel has been established. And so as to establish this secure channel, there is always a requirement to have a host key for this SFTP server. This key is presented to the clients for performing the server authentication, and the clients cannot connect to the server if this host key is missing. The host key for SFTP server can be uploaded using either of these methods. The first one is to upload the key store from the load new certificate page. In the load certificates wizard that was previously also part of WPG console, there is now a new additional checkbox indicated as is the certificate for an SFTP server authentication. This checkbox has to be checked so as to add the additional certificate which is required for the SFTP server authentication. The other way of uploading this host key is to upload it from the load SFTP keys page. This is a new page which has been added under the link of account admin profile certificate. We have to browse, then select the specific key, and then upload this key which would again get used for the server authentication. Moving on to slide 19. On this slide, we have highlighted the essential configurations which can be changed from the WPG console for the integrated SFTP server. The essential properties are the SFTP port which gets used when the SFTP server gets started, the max auth requests which determines the maximum number of SFTP server login attempts, and the auth timeout, which essentially is the idle timeout during the performance of the authentication to the SFTP server. As in case of an integrated FTP server, similarly, the events as well as the start-stop operations of this SFTP server can be controlled from the WPG console. Now that we have seen the brief on the server-side support for SFTP, we will move on to slide 20 to understand about the SFTP client usage within WPG. We can move to slide 21, which gives the details on the SFTP support for the client's part. As we have seen, SFTP stands for the Secure File Transfer Protocol, and version 2 onwards, there is also a support for SFTP clients included in WPG. Essentially, it means that now we can configure SFTP receiver and sender so as to work with any SFTP server. There are various mechanisms followed to perform the initial secure handshake. One among them is the client authentication. The client authentication by itself can be done either by password, by providing a public-private key pair, or by providing a keyboard interactive authentication mechanism. WPG supports the first two of these, which is the password or a public-private key. The username and password should be that of the SSH user that the client is logging in as. In case of the public key authentication, the SSH clients and servers authenticate each other by exchanging the public-private key pairs. Each of these must have access to their own private key, and they must have access to each other's public key, unless, of course, the server validation is disabled. For case of the exchange of the keys, the algorithm which gets supported is the AES-2XCBC, and for calculation of the message digest, it's the HMAC-MD5. Moving on to slide 22. This slide explains us the various layers at which the SSH authentication helps us to obtain a secure transfer. The first of these layers is the transport layer protocol, which essentially provides the server authentication. The server authentication is achieved by the exchange of private public keys. It also provides for the confidentiality of the document exchange, essentially to avoid any over-the-wire sniffing. This is done using encryption of the data. And it also provides the integrity of the exchange by ensuring that the document or the message reaches the destination without any modification. And this is achieved using the message digest. The next level is the user authentication protocol that provides for the client authentication. And the connection protocol essentially provides for multiplexing on the multiple channels on the secured layer. I would now hand over this session to my colleague Rita, who would help us understand the other critical features of Archiver and the Web Mailbox. Over to you, Rita.
Thank you, Arturo. Let's move on to the slide 24. WebSphere Partner Gateway version 6.2 has a new enhanced archiver feature in terms of the performance, usability, and reporting capabilities. More about this feature will be discussed in the upcoming slide. Let's move on to the slide 25. The new archiver is a graphical user interface tool for data archiving and purging from common file system and application database. The new archiver restore feature allows archive data can be restored. The archiver tool is a new enterprise application that is deployed on the WPG server cluster. The archiver configuration can be easily done from the console. All changes are effective at runtime, and no server restore is required. The new archiver tool improves performance and reporting capabilities. The new archiver runs as a single scheduled task for archiving and purging. Needs not manual intervention of running separate scripts. And the new archiver provides archiver report that is available on the console. Moving on to the slide 26. A criteria can be specified for the archiver configuration, such as data retention period. Specifies number of days the data need to be retained in the system. Location where to store the archive data if the data is required to be archived. And schedule when to run the archival task. The archival configuration can be updated from console. When the archival configuration is changed, the server is notified of the change. You might see an intermediate state in the task field as the server updates the configuration, such as disabling. There are 10 different possible status for the archiver. The archiver task will have exactly one of given status at any point. Moving on to the slide 27. This slide covers the store, restore, and report feature of the archiver. Archiver restore. A console-based restore feature is provided such that the archive data can be restored from the console. The data from the archive table lg_msg_archive is restored, and the non-repudiation folder is restored as well. The restore feature is available under the Archive Restore tab on the console. Archive report. Each task that runs and generates a report. A patchnet set of reporting listing is available on console. This list displays the start time, end time, and the status of each task. In addition, there are 3 new events have been introduced for archiver runtime status. The next chart will cover an overview of these new events. Moving on to the slide 28. In this slide, we will overview the 3 new events for Archiver. The first event is Archiver Task Successful, which is an informational event. The second event is Archiver Task Error, which is an error event. The third event is Archiver Task Stopped by User, which is a warning event. These events can be configured as alertable and generate alerts for any of them. Moving on to the slide 29. In this slide, we will discuss another support feature, integration with Web Sphere Transformation Extender, WTX. In version 6.2, WPG now allows direct integration of WTX with its runtime using the extensibility framework. making it easier for you to build custom integration points for WPX. There are three new actions have been added in WPG 6.2. The first action is EDI interchange validation. This action validates the EDI interchange and passes the original EDI document for transformation. The second action is WPX transformation. This action provides transformation functionality. The third action is EDI re-enveloper. This action re-envelopes the EDI interchange and envelopes each individual transaction with the parent envelope headers. Moving on to the slide 30. This session will cover another new critical feature supported. It's called Webmail Bug. More about this feature will follow in the next slide. Moving on to the slide 31. The Webmail Bug is a new feature was introduced in WPG 6.2 FixTech 3. This feature allows partners, customers, and vendors to interact with the hub using just browser alone. That is web-based support for B2B interaction. No external infrastructure is required, such as FTP server, email facility, and so on. The new features enable to perform the following additional tasks in console. Upload document to transact. Monitor the status of business documents. Download the received business documents. For an external partner to make use of the new features, the hub administrator has to provide permissions. We will discuss more details in next slide. Moving on to the slide 32. This session describes the prerequisite tasks are required to work with Webmail Bug feature. Enable Webmail Bug at hub level. Edit the permission patch to allow access to inbox and outbox modules from the community console. Enable Webmail Bug at partner level. For an external partner to make use of the Webmail Bug features, the hub administrator has to give permissions of the inbox outbox modules to which user group has access. Enable Webbox Receiver. Webbox Receiver is a system-created receiver provided with Webmail Bug feature. The hub administrator has to enable this receiver prior to sending documents to internal partners through the Webmail Bug. Moving on to the slide 33. The Webmail Bug provides the following facilities. Inbox. In the inbox page of the console, you can search for documents available in the inbox. In addition, you can also download the document received from the partners, customers, or vendors. Outbox. In the outbox page of the console, you can search for the document available in your outbox. In addition, you can also monitor the status of the documents in the outbox. Send file. In the send file page of the console, you can upload and send files. The inbox and outbox page of the console correlates to email inbox and outbox view. This feature is very useful for external partners who do not have infrastructure to participate in transactions. For more details about this feature, please visit the link provided here. Moving on to the slide 34. In summary, through this session, we have reviewed high-level architecture, worked through the business and transport protocols supported in the WebSphere Partner Gateway version 6.2. Also, our intent through this session is to make our customers aware of several critical features they can avail by moving to version 6.2 and its latest level of big tech. Moving on to the slide 35. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts, like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentations. Develop Works offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And my notification link on all product support pages that you sign up for weekly email updates for product of interest to you. This concludes our session today. And at this point in time, I'll turn the presentation over to Joseph. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonali, Atu, and Rita for a great presentation. At this point in time, Amy, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Ramakrishna. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering how to determine, like, which mode of installation I need to go for, like, fully distributed or simple distributed, like based on what factors I need to determine?
Yeah, this is Atul here. I would take your question. The essential differentiation on the modes of installations is based on, there's something called based on the load or based on the machines deployed, we can determine that. Essentially, this is driven by the business requirement as to how much of the WPG is an extensive CPU processing required to have it. So as to speak, if you have seen the architecture diagram, the document manager is the one which is the brain of the, or it's the heart of this product. So that's where the most of the processing of the documents occurs. So in case of a fully distributed mode, and with a heavy load, we can have separate CPU designated just for this document manager component. So if such a requirement occurs in the business scenario, then we can install a fully distributed mode wherein each of the WPG components, the receiver, the console, the document manager, can be installed on a separate physical machine. In case of normal optimum behavior, a simple distributed mode is also fine, wherein all the components reside on the same processor or the same physical machine. The simple mode as such is not very recommended into any production kind of an environment. It's more of to probably provide a demo or a very limited or a very low volume data transfers what may happen. That's primarily because it doesn't really scale up in terms of the WASMD clustering, and it doesn't really help us in to achieve the failover kind of scenarios or the high performance throughput kind of scenarios. Does this answer you?
I guess so. So basically, there is no harm in going for a fully distributed write-ahead writing.
There is no harm in going into fully distributed mode. The only thing is that then you have more number of physical machines which needs to be managed. So that's the flip side. So if you are okay with having the same throughput achieved through a simple distributed mode, it will comparatively it will work the same way as a fully distributed mode.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Aram Kumar. Your line is open.
Hi, Atul, Sonali, and Rita.
Hi.
Yeah. Actually, I have installed a WPG version 6.1.1 for integrated FTP. We did not install this integrated FTP for 6.1.1. We are planning to install this SFTP for 6.2 now. So is it mandatory to install version 6.1.1 for integrated FTP?
You want to migrate this existing 6.1.1 into a 6.2 installation? I'm just trying to understand the environment what you will be setting up.
Yes, we are planning to do smart migration, but in our present environment, we did not install this integrated FTP. But for our 6.2, we are planning to install SFTP. For SFTP installation for 6.2, is it mandatory to install integrated FTP for 6.1.1 now?
Yes. So you'll have to first install the integrated FTP server, then perform the migration to the 6.2 base level, GA level. And from then on, you would need to apply the 6.2 6PAC 4A, which would give the capability for the integrated SFTP server.
Okay. Is there any detailed document available for SFTP installation at all?
This documentation is available, and the link for that is also provided in the WPG 6.2 FP4A readmes, as well as the hosted site from where you can download the FP4A.
Yeah, fine. I have that URL. And hi, Sonali.
Hi, Adam.
I have a question about the slide number 9. And when I invoke the DB loader installer, that is setup.exe for Windows, it's not showing me the migrate existing instance for the BCG apps database. Is there any reason? But for hub installation, I'm getting this page.
But DB loader, you are not?
No, I'm not getting for the BCG apps installation. The exact path would be from the installation CD, C1SNAML, and then the DB loader directory. So instead, this setup.exe. I have installed.
Okay, so you're trying to move from 611 to 62, right?
Yes, exactly, Sonali.
We have seen these kind of issues coming up when the installation registries get corrupted, Arun. Otherwise, I don't see any other reason of it not showing the version.
Oh, yeah. But then, okay, so now we'll try it once again.
You tried multiple installations on that machine?
No, it's for a single installation, but it's a test machine I have tried more than 5 or 6 times a year.
Okay, so that might be the reason.
Okay, then I don't think I will uninstall everything and then try once again. If I will not get anything, I will contact you about this analysis.
Sure. Just send me a note.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hi, Rita. I have a question for you about R-Cable. When install this, when I do smart migration from 6.1.1 to 6.2. And by default, this archiver page shows me 14 days, that is 14 days. And I have modified that into 30 days. But once my installation has been completed, it again shows me 14 days only. Is it a product specific or?
No, this is Atul. I would take it. After you perform the migration part of it from 6.1 to 6.2, we would have to reset the period as well as the frequency of the archiver running. So that's the reason you might see the default value again coming up at 14 days.
Okay, so is it possible to increase the data retention period from 14 to 30?
Yes, it is possible to increase the data retention period. However, what we have found during our test is that the optimum kind of an load, it again depends on how much of a traffic gets processed during this retention period. So if you are not transacting many documents, then I would suggest you can increase the retention period. But if it is a very heavy traffic intensive things, then and 15 days kind of a period is what we have found it to be an optimum to work in, both for the archiver to be efficient as well as optimum, and as well as the data storage to be optimum there.
Okay, actually in our present environment, we have 30-day storage for retention period for the data. And we are using script scheduled on TWS. I tried after installing to change the days, but there is no option to change the days ID. Am I correct, Atul?
We need to stop the archiver, the process, and then change it in the configuration from the archiver configuration page. I believe it is there.
This archive is also a component like a console document manager. Am I correct, Atul?
Yeah, that's right. And the archiver itself is an EAR. In a sense, like it itself is an application by its own. So if you can see under your applications, it gets listed as an EAR application.
Okay, will this command work for this? I mean, stopserver.sh space a BCG archiver?
Yeah, that would work. And also you can stop it through your WAS admin console. You'll have to go to the applications and then select that particular BCG archiver application and stop it.
Are you telling about from console itself I can stop this this archiver?
Right. Go to the WAS admin console, the WAS administrative console, and then
okay, from applications.
Right.
Okay, so if I don't need this this archiver component, I can disable it from console, right?
Yes, you can essentially stop the archiver from running. From our experience also, I would recommend that you have the archiver running, because over the time what happens is the data gets accumulated, and then it becomes a difficult task to either archive or to purge the records later down the line.
Okay, we have already still running for backup this kind of data. So if I run this archiver itself, will it be a problem? Or do I need to stop our script?
The backup scripts you are saying is the database level backup scripts?
No, for the data, the transaction data. In our environment, we show 30 days for the transaction data.
Okay.
So if I enable this archiver configuration as well, so will it be a problem?
So see, archiver configuration as such would also, the way it takes the backup of the data, it also does an purging or a cleaning from the database tables activity. So that ensures that the runtime data and the older accumulated data do not affect the performance of the entire system. So essentially, if you have a backup, an external backup outside of a WPG backup scripts or a backing up mechanism, if that mechanism is also taking care of, let's say, taking care of purging of that older data, then I guess it would be fine. But if it is not, If it is just taking a dump of the database and keeping it somewhere for, say, backup purpose, and the runtime data instance still continues to have the older records, then I would suggest that the archiver be run at a regular interval.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Coming back to your question on the data retention period, I think, yes, it can be changed from the console. I just verified it. So it can be changed. You'd have to have the archiver process in the enabled state and then edit the properties there and then save it and then again.
Hub admin?
It's under the hub admin archiver type tab.
Archiver?
Hub admin, hub configuration, archiver configuration.
Okay. There is no option to edit this archiver configuration page at all.
Right. What you need to do is by default the archiver might be shown as disabled.
So yes.
Enable it and then again click it as disabled, then it shows up that edit button. By default the edit option is not done. You have to change the status to scheduled.
So I have to disable and then enable, then it will show the page for edit, am I right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so does that answer you or is there anything?
Yeah, I have got an answer from you three. So thanks, everyone.
At this time, I have no further questions.
Thank you, Amy. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.